It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's 55 degrees under a light rain fog mist. We're looking for more rain today, high near 59, northwest wind of 15, rain overnight too, north wind of 15, and rain tomorrow until 1 p.m. at least. North winds gusting as high as 20 tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska Airlines prevents a passenger from boarding a flight in Seattle, but not until they had done a tour of the Southeast. The wild Alaskan is no longer among us, but it had another life before it was a floating strip club. And more on Bristol Bay's record-breaking run of salmon. All that and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The White House confirms that three states, Florida, Texas, Missouri, now account for 40% of all new COVID-19 cases nationwide. It also says that for a second week, one in five of all U.S. cases was recorded in Florida. With millions of people still unvaccinated against COVID-19, the Delta variant of the virus is spreading quickly in the U.S. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, head of the CDC, notes that Delta is more aggressive than previous strains of coronavirus.
It is one of the most infectious respiratory viruses we know of and that I have seen in my 20-year career.
According to new research from a leading group of scientists, the latest COVID surge could get worse throughout the summer and peak in the fall. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Republican leader Kevin McCarthy are still trading jabs over the Select Committee investigating the deadly January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports the verbal jousting comes a day after Pelosi rejected two of McCarthy's GOP picks for the panel, and McCarthy responded by pulling all five.
The House minority leader is not letting up on Pelosi or the Select Committee itself.
From what the Speaker has done, that puts a great deal of doubt in it.
And Speaker Pelosi is not letting up either, saying she had to reject McCarthy's, quote, ridiculous picks of Representatives Jim Banks and Jim Jordan from the panel.
It's my responsibility as Speaker of the House to make sure we get to the truth on this, and we will not let their antics stand in the way of that.
As of now, the eight-member committee is made up of seven Democrats and one Republican, Liz Cheney, all appointed by Pelosi, who has not ruled out adding other members to the panel in the future. Claudia Grisales, NPR News, the Capitol.
The bootleg fire in Oregon has become the third largest fire in the state in more than 100 years. NPR's Nathan Rott reports that while most of the blaze is burning in largely uninhabited areas, smoke from it and other blazes are casting smoke across the United States.
Much of the smoke blurring U.S. skies is coming from wildfires burning in Canada, where record heat has baked forests, priming them for flame. The same conditions exist across much of the western U.S., with multiple states dealing with a climate change-fueled mega drought and heat wave following heat wave following heat wave. A history of fire suppression has also left many areas choked with undergrowth that acts as kindling for fires. Firefighting resources are spread thin across the region and will likely remain so for the next month or more. Nathan Rott, NPR News.
Weekly unemployment claims have hit a two-month high, but overall more people are still heading back to work. The Labor Department reporting today the number of Americans to file initial claims for state unemployment benefits rose by 51,000 last week to 419,000. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Alaska Airlines says it prevented a COVID-19 infected passenger from boarding a flight in Seattle on Tuesday after they'd arrived from Alaska on a multi-leg trip that included Sitka, Juneau, and Ketchikan. As KCAW's Catherine Rose reports, the unnamed passenger reportedly tested positive in Sitka on Monday, but then flew the next day to the lower 48 on the multi-stop Milk Run through southeast Alaska.
Public health nurse Denise Ewing wrote a letter published in the Sitka Sentinel newspaper warning that a COVID-infected person and three symptomatic companions had managed to fly out of Sitka despite being told to isolate. It urged anyone who'd been on Tuesday's Alaska Flight 73 from Sitka to Juneau and Flight 60 from Juneau to Ketchikan to Seattle to be aware of their potential exposure. Libby Watanabe was a passenger on the flight from Juneau to Seattle.
Yeah, it was a typical flight. It was very full. There were no empty seats.
Once she got home, she saw Ewing's letter circulating on Facebook. If it hadn't been for social media, she wouldn't have known.
I think that's just really irresponsible of them, and it's worrisome when you find out things like this and how other people have unnecessarily put not just myself and my family in harm's way, others as well.
Watanabe is vaccinated, but she's concerned about exposure to variants. She contacted her local health clinic, and they recommended she monitor for symptoms for the next week. Sitka is in the midst of its worst outbreak of COVID-19, with more than 200 active cases in the community. Juneau's deputy city manager, Robert Barr, says it's unclear to him how people knowingly infected with the coronavirus could get on a plane.
People are not supposed to get on commercial flights if they're symptomatic, and certainly if they've tested positive for COVID-19, that's a prohibition.
Barr says Juneau's Emergency Operations Center hasn't received word of the incident. His office did get an email on Tuesday from a concerned citizen.
We were not aware that there were symptomatic positive individuals that flew. Certainly that's concerning.
He added that Juneau's local officials are reaching out to the state for more information. Dr. Louisa Castrodale is an epidemiologist with the Alaska Division of Public Health. She told reporters there's a process for preventing infected passengers from flying. It's not voluntary. It's called the Do Not Board List and is run by the Centers for Disease Control.
This is a conversation that goes through several aspects. You know, what's the disease? How infectious is this person? And what is their intent to travel? Because there needs to be that component of an intent to travel, not just somebody who said, oh, you know what? I just found out I was positive or I'm infectious. I'm gonna stay put.
The no-fly list is coordinated at the federal, state, and local levels. And she says it's not always as fast as someone booking a ticket.
And sometimes because of timing, it's difficult to either get somebody on or off that list very quickly.
Castrodale did not clarify whether that process had begun for the passengers in Sitka or whether the COVID-positive passenger was on the Do Not Board list. Alaska Airlines released a written statement on Wednesday. It says the company was notified by the CDC about the COVID-positive passenger while Flight 60 was already in the air and headed to Seattle. It says airline staff met the passenger in Seattle and informed them they would not be allowed to continue to their final destination. The statement does not mention the three other passengers who Sitka's public health nurse says had exhibited symptoms. Castrodale says if a person on a flight tests positive for any highly communicable infectious disease or virus, those results are sent to the CDC.
And those notifications, again, go back through to the quarantine station, who then works with the airline companies to go through the passenger manifests and then shoots out notifications to the states where they have residents who have been exposed.
But ultimately, it's state health authorities who notify passengers who may have been exposed. But as of Wednesday afternoon, Watanabe says she hasn't gotten any calls, and she's not happy about people flouting the rules or refusing to get vaccinated.
Folks that chose to not be vaccinated, you know, those folks may have been on the flight as well. And, you know, this could very well be a super spreader event because the flight was so full, which is, you know, it's very, very disappointing.
KCAW reached out to the state's public health officials and the CDC for more information. But as of Wednesday afternoon, its questions remain unanswered. With additional reporting from Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick in Juneau, I'm Catherine Rose reporting in Sitka.
Kodiak recently bid so long to the vessel Wild Alaskan. Once the envy of the Alaska fishing fleet, she lived out her last years as a notorious floating strip club until she was declared a nuisance vessel. Finally, in early July, she was towed out to sea 75 miles southeast of Kodiak and sent to a watery grave. But as KMXT's Dylan Simard reports, there's much more to this story.
Long before strippers gyrated for fishermen who boarded the Wild Alaskan for a night of fun, she was known as the FV Shaman, one of the most profitable boats to ever throw pots in Alaskan waters. She had a $1 million price tag when she was built in Tacoma in 1974, 110 feet long with a high wheelhouse, made to shrimp and crab, and boy did the Shaman crab. Tom Hendel and his brother worked on the crew back in the late 70s when the Shaman was in its glory days.
We were the top boat on Kodiak and bringing in deck loads every day. But I knew, had one friend who came up from California, got a job at a cannery, was working on the dock unloading. Some guy got hurt on a big crab boat. They hired him off the dock and he made $100,000 in 6 weeks. That was a pretty common story. A good season in 6 weeks or so would have been $40,000 to $60,000. $100,000 seasons in the early 70s were very common. But you got to remember, in back in the early to mid 70s, we started fishing the middle of August and we'd fish all the way to December.
The skipper of the Shaman, Chuck Wells, had a shrewd reputation, a World War II veteran and a taskmaster who ran his crew hard. Even so, Hendel says he was well-loved and admired for his exploits, like the time he pried the Shaman off a sandbar in False Pass.
False Pass is usually marked with buoys after they figure out the passage because it changes every winter. And we laid that Shaman over sideways when the tide got a hold of us on a sandbar, and the starboard rail was underwater, and one crew member put a life ring around his waist and climbed over the rail on the high side. Walk-in cooler door came open and frozen roasts were flying around and ducks up there laughing. And I realized that, well, we were in 12 feet of water and the boat was 36 feet wide, so I didn't really need to worry. And he just turns the rudder hard over to port and pours the coals to the engine and rights the boat up, and then we just keep sealing our way out.
Back then, as Kodiak fishermen are fond of saying, crab was king. And it was. Some made millions in the Bering Sea. But other mariners were not so lucky.
I got to tell you this, too. Guys were dying every day, it seemed like, back in the 70s and 80s. We'd be on the radio listening to Maydays and the Coast Guard trying to find people and boats going down and friends of ours.
Hendel says he's still haunted by one tragedy.
And we were listening to the Coast Guard answer a Mayday, and it was the exact same boat of the Shaman, but it was a low wheelhouse, and they were heading from offshore, coming from Seattle, and they were icing up. They called a Mayday, and we're listening to this whole thing going on for hours, and Chuck said, well, they're dead, because they told the Coast Guard they were heading to shore, and Chuck said, the closer you get to shore, the colder the air gets and the more ice you make. And they were on the radio telling their loved ones they loved them and goodbye, and they're all dead.
The Shaman had its share of close calls, but it went on to fish lobster in Hawaii for several years in the mid-80s, after the crab fishery got more competitive. Later, the boat was part of a federal buyback program in the 90s and fell out of Chuck Wells' hands. At some point in the late 2010s, the Shaman fell into the hands of Darren Byler, who turned it into the Wild Alaskan Strip Club. After the Wild Alaskan was impounded by the city of Kodiak in 2017, she lay derelict in the Near Island Harbor. Kodiak's notoriously temperamental weather scoured her hull and stripped away paint that already struggled to conceal the boat's age. When the ship was in its prime, Carmen Lundy used to do books for the Shaman. Although she was devastated to see how much the ship had deteriorated, she says at least the Shaman's saga is finally over, and now the boat and its old skipper are reunited at last.
Broke my heart. I don't know that Chuck would have been against the strip club. He would have probably thought, I mean, I had a hunch he would think that, well, all right. To see it be sunk, the only thing that makes me even feel even a little better is that now that they've deep-sixed it, it's the same place as ashes are.
And so ends the true but tragic tale of the shaman, remembered in Kodiak as both famous and infamous, but always with fondness. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
Bristol Bay's 2021 sockeye run is the largest on record. 63.2 million fish have returned to the bay, breaking the 2018 record of 62.9 million. It's the fourth time since 1952 that the bay's run has surpassed 60 million fish. Alana Hurley is a commercial fisherman from Dillingham and the executive director of United Tribes of Bristol Bay. She says it's an exciting time to be there.
Breaking these records since the commercial fishery has begun is just a real testament to the stewardship for thousands of years that our people, you know, have taken very seriously that responsibility.
Tim Sands is the executive department of Fish and Game Area Management biologist for the west side of the fishery. He says that the new record shows Bristol Bay sockeye management is working.
I think it's a shining beacon of sustainable management. You know, we've been prosecuting the commercial salmon fishery in Bristol Bay for 1884, and we're still able to set records on total run. And I think that speaks to the escapement-based management that we use, and it's great.
The Nooshigak District on the west side of the fishery also set several records this season. Sands says the overall record is largely attributed to that district.
We're ahead of the forecast in large part because the Nooshigak District produced 12 million more fish than was expected. So that's the big difference maker. Obviously, Ugashik is above forecast as well, but the 12 million sockeye from the Nooshigak that was above the 15 million forecast is the big driver here.
Fishermen there broke the district's record for daily catches 2 days in a row. They hauled in 1.7 million fish on June 30th and 1.8 million on July 1st. Other species haven't been as prolific. Nooshigak River's Chinook Run has yet to meet the minimum escapement of 55,000 kings. It would be the third season in a row where the Chinook Run fell below the minimum goal. The district's run of 27.2 million fish is the second largest on record, behind the 2018 record of 33 million. Bristol Bay's enormous sockeye run stands in stark contrast to salmon returns in other parts of the state. The sockeye and Chinook runs to the Chignik River are extremely low for the fourth year in a row, and as the Chum and Chinook returns to the Yukon River hit record lows, people there are struggling to get enough fish for subsistence. Four fishermen escaped with their lives over the weekend after a seine vessel sank south of Ketchikan. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, crew members from another fishing boat heard their distress call over the radio and arrived in time to rescue them.
Around 3 a.m. Sunday, Pete Feenstra says he and a three-person crew were readying themselves for a salmon opener south of Ketchikan. Then he heard a mayday call from the radio. The Mount Pavlov, a fellow seiner, needed help.
And they were coming, you know, they're kind of booming in on the radio. It sounded a lot closer than where they had said that they were.
Feenstra says he looked at the navigation system aboard his 56-foot seiner, the Noble Provider, and saw that the vessel in distress was less than a mile away, and he knew what he had to do.
Pulled up anchor, and we just flew over there, and by the time we got there, the boat was pretty much gone. I saw the stern sticking out of the water and the skiff, and they had crawled in a skiff. But the skiff was still attached to the boat, so I sent my skiff over. They jumped in.
He says they tried to save the skiff as the 63-foot fishing boat went down, but as it sank nearly 300 feet beneath the waves, the skiff went with it.
I just told my guys to cut the line. Didn't want to jeopardize anything else, so cut the line, and within seconds it was gone.
They returned to the Noble Provider, where a Ketchikan-based 45-foot Coast Guard response boat picked up the shaken but otherwise unharmed crew members and returned them to shore. It's not yet clear what caused the Mount Pavlov to go down. Its owner, Rick Rude, didn't respond to interview requests on Wednesday. The Coast Guard is investigating, says Chief Petty Officer Kip Wadlow.
We want to make sure that if there are any, you know, issues that need to be improved, that we can identify those and then, you know, potentially make changes later on down the line for commercial fishing vessels and increasing their safety.
But one thing is certain, it was a harrowing experience for all involved, Fientra said 3 days after the incident.
I've seen boats on the rocks. I've been on a boat on a rock. I've been on a boat that caught fire and sank, and my own boat. And no, it's a scary feeling on no matter what side of it you're on. Obviously, a lot more on the side of the person on the boat. But, you know, we did what we could to get over there as quickly as we could and did whatever we needed to.
As of Wednesday, there's no word on whether crews will attempt to salvage the 72-year-old wooden vessel. State records show it has fished in Alaska since at least 1978. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Salmon catches are big in some regions, bleak in others. Updates after this.
Grundin's Deck Boss 15-inch boots feature a protective toe cap, uppers that won't crack, and compression-molded rubber outsoles for better traction on wet decks. Made in USA.
Some of the biggest salmon catches of the season have crossed to the dock so far, notably at Bristol Bay, where the Sockeye Run has set a record topping 63 million fish. That's produced a bay catch so far of more than 38 million sockeye salmon, bringing the Alaska total to over 47 million statewide, beating preseason expectations. Bristol Bay sockeye so far represent 82% of the statewide sockeye and 56% of all salmon harvested across Alaska. The Alaska Peninsula is a distant second at over 5.5 million reds, and Kodiak has topped the 1 million sockeye mark. It's those hard-to-predict pink salmon that are supposed to push Alaska's total salmon harvest this year to 190 million fish, up 61% over last year's total take. The forecast calls for a haul of 124.2 million pinks this summer. So far, statewide pink landings are nearing 23 million, with most coming from Prince William Sound. The humpy harvest there was at 17 million fish this week. Chum salmon are in short supply in all regions. A statewide catch of less than 5 million is less than half the usual chum number at this point. Some of the most sluggish salmon catches are coming from southeast Alaska, where just over 3 million fish have crossed the docks. At Cook Inlet, the salmon catch remains bleak at under 1 million fish for all species at both the upper and lower inlet districts combined. Chignik got a first commercial salmon opener this week, and way out at Norton Sound, a first-ever experimental seine fishery for pink salmon opened this week. Our salmon numbers come from McKinley Research, compiled for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 22, date issued 10 a.m. on July 18th. The Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Tuesday, July 20th, and remain open until further notice. There will be a 105-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, July 20th, to 9 p.m. Saturday, July 24th, in the following areas. In the Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Kajubiak Bay section, will remain closed. The Outer Iakulik and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District. The Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. And the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District. There will be an 81-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, July 20th, to 9 p.m. Friday, July 23rd, in the following areas. In the Raspberry Strait, northwest of Afognak, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, northeast of Afognak, Duck Bay, and southeast of Afognak sections of the Afognak District. The Humpy Dead Man section of the Alitak District. The northeast Kodiak District, except for the Buskin River section, will remain closed. And the Eastside Kodiak District. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, July 20th, to 9 p.m. Thursday, July 22nd, in the Mainland District. As previously announced, the Azuit Bay section of the Afognak District remains open until further notice. And short notice in-period closures may occur for seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the North Shelikof area as designated in the North Shelikof Strait Sockeye Salmon Management Plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. Until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak district, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. And other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 22nd day of July, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:45. It won't set again until 10:45. That will give us 17 hours of daylight. It's a loss of 3 minutes and 41 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 41, set in 1920, and our record high was 80, set in 1955. Both are safe. 55 degrees right now. It has been 55 degrees all day long. It was 54 momentarily. And what they're calling this is a light rain fog mist. We're getting northwest winds to 9 miles per hour out at the airport right now. We're looking for more rain this afternoon, high near 59. Northwest winds to 15. Rain tonight too, low of 54, north winds to 15. Our chance of precipitation for today and tonight is 100%. That comes down to 90% for tomorrow morning till 1 p.m. High near 60 tomorrow, with north winds around 15 miles per hour, gusting as high as 20. And a 40% chance of rain is all for Friday night. For Saturday, just cloudy skies. High near 60, northeast wind to 10. So it looks like a pretty nice Saturday. And they're saying partly sunny on Monday. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 2:11 this afternoon. That will be a 6.8-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 7:07 p.m. of 2.6 feet. Our next high tide will be at 1:23 a.m. of 10.3 feet. And our low tide for tomorrow morning is a significant minus tide, 8:25 a.m., and a minus 1.8 feet. Over on the west side, and this is Larsen Bay, you have a high tide coming up at 2:31 p.m. of 12.1 feet, followed by a low tide at 8:01 p.m. of 3.4 feet. Your next high tide will be at 1:58 a.m., 15.7 feet, and your minus tide for the morning on the west side will be at 8:54 a.m. and be minus 3.4 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for the Shelikof Strait. Small craft advisory for tonight, northwest 20, seas to 5 feet now. For tomorrow, north 20, seas to 5 feet. Kodiak's east side offshore, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, small craft advisory for tomorrow, northwest 20 right now, seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, north 20, seas building to 8 feet. Kodiak City Council will be holding a regular meeting tonight. That will be happening at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. The meeting is open to the public. It will be broadcast right here on KMXT on 100.1 FM and also web streamed from the city's website, where you would need to go to get the links to that web stream, and you can also find agendas and meeting packets there. If you need more information, call the clerk at 486-8636. Also, nominating petitions for 1 2-year city mayor seat and 2 3-year city council seats are available now in the city clerk's office. For more information, call the clerk. That number again, 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.